Beyond the Highland Mist by Karen Marie Mawning. Chapter 18. Come, lass. The command was toneless and unmistakably dangerous, and even now the mere word made her shiver with desire. The flush of heat stole her breath.
Hawk!
Don't. The word was a warning. Now, take my hand. What was he going to do? She wondered frantically. Behind her, she felt Grimm step closer, edging her toward the hawk.
Wait!
She held out a hand to ward him off.
Move, m'lady, Grimm said softly.
Don't lock me in a room!
How could I not? Hawk sneered. Knowing that you would go back to a place where it seems you knew little joy. Yet you would rather be there than here with me.
You don't believe I'm from the future,
she gasped.
I'm beginning to, he muttered. How do you think I knew about this?
The Black Queen glittered in his hand. She shrugged.
How?
You, my sweet wife, talked about it when you were poisoned, worried and fretted and tried to find it.
But I only just remembered.
Your sleeping mind remembered sooner.
But how did you get it?
It was Grimm who told her.
The Lady Coleman saw it fall from your hand the night she claims you arrived.
But how?
Lady Coleman entrusted it to me after the wedding. I gave it to the hawk.
She admitted that you're not her blood daughter. I can see no reason why she would lie on that score. Unless Coleman Keep is suffering some strange, contagious madness, he thought grimly.
Will it truly take you back to wherever you came from?
The hawk asked carefully.
I think so. As far as I can tell, it's what brought me here,
she said, her gaze cast upon the cobbled walkway.
And your plan was to get it and go home, lass? You planned to slip from Dalkeith by yourself?
No, with your mother, hawk,
she snapped absurdly.
Of course by myself.
So, you were going to go to Coleman Keep to get this chess piece and try to go back to wherever you came from? That was your plan this evening?
She missed the warning in his careful tone.
Yes, Hawk. I admit it, all right? I was going to try. I'm not certain it will work, but it's the last thing I had in my hand before I ended up here. And legend says the chess set is cursed. It's the only thing I can think of that might have done it. If it brought me here, it might just take me back.
The hawk smiled coolly. He turned the queen in his hand, studying it carefully.
Viking, he mused. Beautiful piece. Well worked and well preserved.
Do you believe me now, hawk?
She needed to know.
That I really am from the future?
Suffice it to say, I don't believe in taking any chances.
He still didn't quite believe, but infinitely better safe than sorry. He turned sharply on his heel and stalked off toward the gardens.
Bring her, Grimm, he called over his shoulder, almost as an afterthought.
But Grimm didn't have to take her anywhere. 1,000 warning bells clanged in her head, and she raced off behind him to catch up. His careful tone, his steely demeanor, his questions. He'd been neatly tying things down to the absolute letter.
The hawk was not a man lacking intellect and purpose. She only hoped she misunderstood his purpose now.
Hawk!
She cried. Hawk's shoulders tightened. He was beyond anger at this moment. He had slipped into the realm of icy resolve. He knew what he had to do as he broke into a run through the gardens, across the bailey, in the blushing Scottish morn. Until it was done, he couldn't afford to let her touch him, to put her sweet hands on his shoulders and beg.
I'll take no chances where my wife is concerned.
Wait!
Adrian broke into a run, fear gripping her heart as she realized he was making a beeline for the northern edge of the bailey, where the forge was burning brightly.
No, hawk!
She screamed as he melted into the gardens. Her feet flew as she plunged through the lush greenery, racing over the beds of anemones and purple iris. She leapt the low stone walls and pushed thorny rose branches from her face, tearing the soft palms of her hands until she erupted from the gardens, only to see him 12 lengths ahead of her. Gasping for breath, she called on every ounce of fleet-footed strength she had. If she made it at all, it would be close, too close. From a window high above, Lydia watched the scene unfold. Pushing against the pain of her unwilling muscles, Adrian desperately tried to catch up to Hawk, but it was too late. He already stood next to Adam near the brightly glowing embers. Gasping, she lunged forward just as Grimm's hand closed upon her cape. He yanked hard on the fabric, pulling her backward. The cape ripped and she fell, crying out as she tumbled to the ground.
Hawk! Don't!
Destroy this, Hawk commanded Adam.
No!
Adrian screamed. Adam cast a momentary eye upon the felled beauty.
It would seem the lady feels otherwise.
I didn't ask you to think, Adam Black, and I don't give a bloody damn what the lady thinks.
Adam smiled impishly.
I take it you have failed to jest the falcon, Lord Hawk.
Burn it, Smithy, lest I satisfy myself by incinerating you rather than the queen.
Adam, no,
Adrian pleaded. Adam seemed to ponder the situation a moment. Then, with an oddly triumphant look, he shrugged and tossed the piece into the forge. To Adrian, lying flat on the ground, everything seemed to happen in slow motion. She watched in horror as the Black Queen soared through the air and sank into the glowing coals. Adrian swallowed a sob as the flames licked greedily at the chess piece. Her only way out had been destroyed. Hawk sighed his relief. Adrian collapsed against the earth, staring blankly at the soil. The Black Queen was gone. The dense African wood no match for the blaze hot enough to forge steel. No Mooney. No way home. She was here in 1513, with him, forever. Adam made a sound a shade too dark to be laughter as he leaned closer to the Hawk, close enough that only the Hawk heard his low, mocking words.
She will warm my bed in no time at all now,
fool Hawk.
Hawk flinched. The smithy was right. His wife would hate him for what he'd done.
"What the hell are you doing at the forge in the middle of the night anyway?" Hawk snapped.
Adam grinned impishly.
"I am ever a merry wanderer of the night. Besides, one never knows what prime opportunity might present itself for the plucking."
Hawk snarled at the smithy. Behind him, he heard Adrian stagger to her unsteady feet. Her breathing was labored from her run, perhaps from shock as well. Bleakly, the Hawk studied the forge in rigid silence. Adrian's voice trembled with fury.
No one thing, Lord Douglas, and it's all you'll ever need to know. Remember it. Should you someday think I may have changed my mind, I won't. I despise you. You took from me what you had no right to take, and there's nothing you can ever do to earn my forgiveness. I hate you!
Despise me as you must, he said quietly, still staring at the forge. But you can never leave me now. That's all that matters.
Lugnasad, Midsummer.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. Shakespeare, Macbeth.
Chapter 19. Twilight crept up from the ocean and over the cliffs with purple impatience that stained the walls of Dalkeith a dusky crimson. In his study, Hawk watched the night seep through the open doors on the west end. She stood on the cliff's edge, unmoving, her velvet cape tossing restlessly in the wind. What was she thinking as she gazed blindly out to sea? He knew what he'd been thinking, that even the wind sought to unclothe her. He tortured himself with the memory of the sultry rose peaks he knew crowned her breasts beneath the silk of her gown. Her body had been shaped for this time, to wear clinging silks and rich velvets, to be a fine laird's lady, to mate a proud warrior. What the hell was he going to do? Things couldn't go on like this. He'd been trying to provoke her, hoping she'd make him angry so he could lose his head and punish her with his body. But time and again, when he'd pushed, she'd given him only cool civility. And a man couldn't do a bloody thing with that kind of response. He whirled from the door and squeezed his eyes shut to erase all haunting memory of the vision of his wife. Weeks had passed since that day by the forge. Weeks lush with fragile days and delicate dawns, ruby nights and midsummer storms. And in those passing days, those jewels of Scotia summer, were a thousand sights he wanted to share with her. damn it!" He pounded his fist upon the desk, sending papers fluttering and statues scurrying. She was his wife. She had no way back to wherever she'd come from. When was she going to accept that and make the most of it? He would give her anything she wanted, anything, but to leave him. Never that. His existence had all the makings of a gilded living hell, and he could find no exit. As swiftly as it had assailed him, his rage evaporated.
"Adrienne," his lips formed the words silently, "how did we come to this impasse? How did I make such a mess of it?"
"Walk with me, lass," he said softly, and she whirled upon the cliff's edge, a breathtaking flutter of silver and cobalt blue. His colors, the Douglas colors. Unwittingly, it seemed, she wore them often. Did she even know that she donned in vivid splashes the very threads of the Douglas tartan, and that no name could have branded her more certainly his lady? He waved a dismissive hand at his guards. He needed to steal precious moments with her alone before he left. After hours of struggling, he had reached many decisions, first and foremost being that he was long overdue for a visit to Uster, one of his many manors and the most troublesome. He simply couldn't keep neglecting his estates in his lovesick idiocy. The laird had to put in the occasional appearance and take an interest in resolving his villagers' concerns. Besides, he was making no progress here. If she chose Adam in his absence, then he could just die inside and get on with the pretense of living. It was how he'd survived the first 30-odd years. What kind of fool had he become to expect the rest to be any different?
"Laird Douglas," she clipped.
In silence, they walked the cliff's edge together, toward the forest.
"I will be leaving for a time," he said finally as they entered the forest.
Adrienne stiffened. Was he serious?
"Well, where are you going?"
And why did it disturb her so much? He took a sharp, indrawn breath.
"Uster."
"What is Uster, anyway?"
"One of my manors. 17 manors belong to Dalkeith. Uster holds the villages of Duluth and Tanamorosy, and they are an intemperate lot. 'Twas a problem even when the king's men held Dalkeith."
When the king's men held Dalkeith. When her husband had been the king's whore. In the last weeks, the heat of Adrian's anger had cooled, leaving a poignant regret. Hawk had mostly avoided her, except for the occasional times he'd seemed to be trying to pick a fight with her for some reason. She'd half expected him to lock her in his room, but after that terrible night, he had retreated carefully to his study by the sea. There he'd stayed every night, so quiet, so beautiful, and so alone.
"Hawk,"
she began tentatively.
"Yes."
"What exactly did the king's whore do?"
Hawk stiffened. Could this be the chance he'd been waiting for? Perhaps he could dare to hope after all. His laughter was full of bitter self-mockery.
"Are you quite certain you wish to know, lovely Adrienne?"
Lurking behind a towering oak, Esmeralda studied Adrienne's silvery blonde mane, silvery eyes, sparkling face. What did the hawk see in that skinny, pale girl he couldn't find in Esmeralda's sultry embrace? For the first time in weeks, the guards were gone, and the bitch walked unprotected enough that Esmeralda could strike and flee into the shelter of the dark forest. Her beloved hawk might suffer a time of mourning, but he would find solace and sweet passion in Esmeralda's arms once the soil stilled upon his wife's grave. She raised the arrow with a hand that trembled. Frowning, she dug the edge of the notched head into her fleshy palm until blood welled in her tawny gold skin. She grimaced against the pain, but it steadied her nerves. This time she would not fail. Esmeralda had chosen her weapon carefully. Poison had proved too chancy. Her drawn and corded bow would send the arrow flying true, with force enough to lodge in the flesh and bone of Adrian's breast. Esmeralda dropped to her knee and coiled the leather cord tighter. She notched the bow and took sight as Adrienne stepped into a clearing. She nearly faltered when she saw the look on Hawk's face as he gazed at his wife. He loved Adrienne as Esmeralda would have loved him, a wild, claiming no-no-bounds kind of passion. With this realization, any compassion Esmeralda may have felt for Adrian evaporated. She steadied the bow and took aim at Adrian's breast. With a soft whoosh, the arrow flew free. Esmeralda swallowed a frantic scream. At the last minute, the hawk turned, almost as if he saw her lurking in the shadows or sensed the arrow's flight. He moved. No! Oof! Adrian gasped as Hawk flung one powerful arm across her face and thrust her against a tree. Adrian struggled against his back, but he was an immovable mountain. Was this how he intended to win her back after weeks of careful restraint? Was he taking her into the forest to rape her? Oof! His breath hissed out softly, and she pushed harder at his back.
What are you doing, Hawk?
She demanded, but still he said nothing. Hawk shuddered, battling the pain as his eyes scanned the trees. He felt his strength ebbing, but he couldn't give in to the weakness yet, not until he found and stopped whoever was trying to kill his wife. But the bushes were still. The assailant, for whatever reason, had fled. Hawk felt relief rush through him as blood gushed from his wound. When he swayed and crumpled at Adrian's feet, she screamed and screamed. In the shadows, Esmeralda pressed a fist to her mouth. She could feel Hawk's eyes searching the very spot in which she cowered, but the shadows were too dense for even his eyes to penetrate. He turned, and in profile she could see the arrow, still vibrating from the force of the flight, just above his heart. She closed her eyes and swallowed tightly. She'd killed him. The arrow was wickedly notched, and would be impossible to remove without ripping open his chest. She had deliberately designed it to do even more damage in the removing than in the entering. Even if it didn't kill the victim going in, it would certainly kill him coming out. Esmeralda melted to the forest floor and crawled through the underbrush until she was certain she was safe. Then she surged to her feet and ran blindly, her crossbow forgotten on the damp forest floor. Branches slapped her face. A scream gathered and clotted in her throat. Esmeralda swallowed a bitter sob as she leapt a fallen log. A hand shot out lightning quick, halting her abruptly. Adam pulled her to him with a biting grip on her neck.
"Where have you been, lovely whore?"
His eyes were preternaturally bright. She panted into his face. Adam glowered and shook her cruelly.
"I said, where have you been?"
When she still didn't answer, Adam slid his hand up her neck to her throat and squeezed.
"Your life means nothing to me, Gypsy."
His eyes were as icy as his voice. Haltingly, Esmeralda told him everything, begging Adam to save the man she loved, to use his unnatural powers and restore his life. So she knew his identity. He wasn't surprised. The Rome were well versed in the ancient ways.
"If you know who I am, Gypsy whore, you know I don't give a damn about your wishes, or anyone else's for that matter, and I certainly don't care about your pretty hawk. In fact, the hawk is the son of a bitch I came here to destroy."
Esmeralda paled.
"Come," he commanded, and she knew he didn't mean it the way he used to. Not anymore.
Chapter 20.
"What do you mean he doesn't want to see me? I want to see him, so let me in,"
Adrian argued.
"Unless, of course, he's given you orders that he specifically doesn't want me to come in the room,"
she added coolly. Hawk would never do that. Grim didn't budge.
"He wouldn't. You can't be serious. He—"
She trailed off, uncertainly. The hawk wouldn't refuse. Well, he hadn't yet, but— Obdurate Grim, his eyes grave, blocked the door. Adrian peered at him intently.
"Are you telling me that I have been forbidden to enter my husband's room?"
"I have my orders, m'lady."
"I'm his wife."
"Well, maybe if you bloody acted like his wife before now, he wouldn't be in there."
Grim's eyes flashed angrily in his chiseled face.
"Oh!"
Adrian stepped back, startled by his fury.
"I did my friend a grievous wrong. I made a horrible wish that I would take back now with all my heart, if I only could. But I can't."
"You're the one who wished it,"
Adrian exclaimed. Grim continued, unwavering.
And had I known how terrible was the wish I made, how far-reaching and painful the consequences would be, I would have taken my own life first. I am no captain of the guard.
He spat his disgust upon the cobbled stone.
I am no honorable friend. I am the lowest droppings from the foulest beast. I've wished you upon my best friend. May the gods forgive me. And now he lies wounded by an arrow meant for you.
Adrian's eyes widened in her pale face.
I'm not so bad, she whispered. You, my lady, are the Iron Maiden without a heart. You have brought him nothing but pain since you came here. In all my years with the Hawk, I have never seen such suffering in his eyes, and I won't tolerate it even one more day. He would climb into the very heavens and pluck down the stars, one by one, to bestow upon your shining brow. And I tell him you are not worth it. You scoff at his romantic feelings. You shun his freely offered love. You scorn the man himself. Do not tell me you're not so bad, Adrian de Simone. You are the worst thing that's ever happened to the man.
Adrian bit her lip. Grim had such a slanted view of things. What about all the unfair things the Hawk had done to her? She was the innocent one.
He burned my queen. He stole my freedom, and he trapped me here. Because he cares for you and refuses to lose you. That's such a terrible thing. He used his own body to save your life. He placed himself like the truest shield before you and took the arrow meant for you. Well, I say, better he had let it find your breast. 'Twould cease his torment, and he wouldn't be bleeding inside or out. I didn't ask him to save me, she protested. Just the point. You didn't have to ask him. He gave it freely, as he would give you everything. But you condemn him, though you know nothing of the mighty Hawk. Tell me, had you seen the arrow flying for him, would you have sacrificed your life for his? I see from your eyes you would not. I'm sorry I wished for you, and upon every star, every night for the rest of my worthless life, I'll be wishing to undo the wrong I've done. Now get out of my sight. The Hawk won't see you now, perhaps not ever, and 'tis good for him not to. Perhaps in time away from you he'll heal, in more ways than one.
Adrian raised her head proudly and met his blazing eyes. She refused to show the pain that closed around her heart.
Tell him I thank him for protecting me. Tell him I'll be back tomorrow, and the next day, and the next, until he sees me and allows me to thank him myself.
I'll tell him no such thing, Grim said flatly. You're no good for him, and I won't be stringing him along in your game.
Then at least tell him I'm sorry, she said softly, and she meant it.
You do not have enough human compassion to feel sorrow, lass. Heart of ice in a body of flame. You're the worst kind. You bring a man nothing but a brief sip of sweetness, then a keg full of bitter dregs.
Adrian said nothing before she fled down the dim corridor.
Where is she? Is she all right? Who's guarding her?
Hawk tossed restlessly in bed, kicking the coverlet off.
She's fine, Hawk. Two guards are outside the peacock room. She's sleeping.
Grim fidgeted with the bottle of whiskey the healer had left on the table, then poured a generous dollop into his glass. He moved abruptly to stand beside the hearth. Hawk watched Grim curiously. His loyal friend seemed unusually tense, probably blaming himself for not being there to prevent the attack, Hawk decided. He studied his bandaged hand carefully.
She didn't ask about me, Grim.
The silence grew until the Hawk reluctantly dragged his gaze from his hand to Grim's rigid profile. When Grim finally glanced up from the flames, the Hawk flinched at the sadness he read in every line of his best friend's face.
She didn't even ask if I was going to be all right? Where the arrow hit? Anything?
Hawk tried to keep his voice level, but it broke harshly.
I'm sorry.
Grim drained his glass and poked at the red-hot embers in the fireplace with the toe of his boot.
Bloody hell! The lass is made of ice!
Rest, Hawk.
Grim spoke into the fire. You've lost a lot of blood. You came too close to dying tonight.
If you hadn't raised your hand in defense, the arrow would have taken out your heart, rather than just pinning your hand to your chest.
Hawk shrugged. A wee scratch on my chest.
Hell, a hole the size of a plum through the palm of your hand. The old healer had to pull the arrow through your hand to get it out. And you hurt him yourself. Had it gotten lodged in your chest, which it should have but for uncanny luck, there would have been naught he could do to save you, cruelly notched as it was. You'll bear scars and pain in that hand for life.
Hawk sighed morosely. More scars and more pain. So what? She hadn't even bothered to see if he was alive. She could have at least pretended to be concerned, visited briefly to maintain the pretense of civility. But no, she probably hoped he was dying, for with him out of the way she would be a very wealthy woman. Was she even now lying in the peacock room, counting her gold and her blessings?
Not even one question, Grim?
Hawk studied the silky hairs around the bandage that covered almost his entire hand.
Not even one.
Hawk didn't ask again. Grim, pack my satchel. Send half the guard and enough staff to ready the manor house in Ooster. I'll leave at dawn.
And quit poking at the blasted fire. It's too damned hot in here already.
Grim dropped the poker to the stone hearth with a clatter. He turned stiffly from the fire and searched Hawk's face.
Are you going alone?
I just told you to ready half the guard.
I meant, what about your waif?
Hawk's gaze dropped back to his hand. He studied it for a moment, then glanced up at Grim and said carefully,
I'm going alone. If she couldn't even be bothered to see if I lived or died, perhaps it's time I quit trying. At the very least, some distance may help me gain perspective.
Grim nodded stiffly.
You're sure you can travel with that wound?
You know I heal quickly. I'll stop at the Rome camp and get some of the chamomile and comfrey poultice they use.
But to ride?
I'll be fine, Grim. Stop worrying. You're not responsible. Hawk didn't miss the bitter smile on Grim's face. It comforted him somewhat to know that his friend was so loyal when his own wife couldn't be bothered to care if he was dead or alive.
You're a true friend, Grim, Hawk said softly.
He wasn't surprised when Grim hurried from the room. In all the years he'd known him, words of praise had always made the man uncomfortable. In the peacock room's massive bed, Adrian tossed restlessly, maddeningly awake. At this moment she was quite certain she would never sleep again. Her mind would never find respite from the bitter, icy clarity that raged through her brain, recoloring her every action since she'd arrived at Dalkeith a vastly different hue. Hawk and Grim rode out as dawn rose over the lush fields of Dalkeith. Satisfaction surged through Hawk as he surveyed his home. With his years of service to the king finally at an end, he could at last see to the needs of his people and be the laird he was born to be. Now he wanted just one more thing, for Adrian to truly be a wife to him in every sense of the word, to help govern Dalkeith by his side. More than anything, he wanted to see their sons and daughters walk this land. Hawk cursed himself for a hopeless romantic fool.
The harvest will be rich this Samhain, Grim remarked.
Aye, that it will, Grim. Adam, Hawk nodded curtly to the smithy who was approaching, the field of gold parting for his dark form.
You're leaving the game. Ye admit defeat, dread Hawk.
Adam gazed mockingly up.
"Don't goad the devil, Smithy,"
Grim warned tersely. Adam laughed.
"Be devil the devil, and devil be damned. I fear no devil and bow to no man. Besides, this concerns you not, or little at least. Certainly not so much as you appear to think. You vastly overrate yourself, gruff Grim."
Adam held the hawk's gaze, smiling.
"Fear not. I will care for her in your absence."
I won't let him near her, Hawk,
Grim hastened to assure him.
Yes, you will, Grim,
Hawk said carefully. If she asks for him, you will let him near her, under no other circumstances. Adam nodded smugly.
And ask she will, again and again in that husky, sweet morning voice she has, and Grim, you might tell her for me that I have coffee from the Rome for her.
You will not tell her that, Hawk snapped.
Are you trying to limit my contact?
I did not agree to provide you with a messenger.
Yet, what will surely be. My guard stands for her,
but it's you I will look to if she comes to harm.
You give her into my keeping.
Nay, but I will hold you responsible if harm should befall her.
I would never let harm come to any woman of mine, and she is mine now, fool Hawk.
Only inasmuch as she wants to be so, the Hawk said softly. And if she does, I will kill both of you with my bare hands and rest easier at night, dead inside, he thought.
You are either impossibly cocky or incredibly stupid, Dreadhawk, the smithy said with scorn. You will return to find the flawless Adrienne in my arms. Already she spends most afternoons with me in your gardens. Soon she will spend them in my bed, Adam taunted.
The Hawk's jaw clenched, his body tensed for violence.
She didn't ask for you, Hawk,
Grim reminded him tonelessly, shuffling from foot to foot.
She didn't ask for him, Captain of the Guard?
Adam asked brightly.
Captain of Honor? Captain of Truth?
Grim flinched as Adam's dark gaze searched his.
Aye, he said tightly. What a tangled web we weave,
Adam drawled slowly, the hint of a smile on his burnished face.
What passes now between the two of you, Grim? Hawk asked.
The smith is a strange man,
Grim muttered.
I would wish you Godspeed, but I believe God suffers little, if any, commerce with men such as us. So, I wish you only a warrior's farewell. And never fear,
I shall keep safe the lovely Adrienne, the smithy promised as he patted Hawk's stallion on the rump. Shadows flickered behind the Hawk's eyes as he took his leave.
Watch her, Grim. If there are any more attempts on her life, send word to me at Uster,
he called over his shoulder as he rode away. His guards could keep her alive, in that he felt secure. But now there would be nothing to keep her from Adam. As Grim watched his best friend leave, Adam studied the stoic warrior.
She didn't ask for him?
He mocked softly.
Who the hell are you, really?
Grim snarled. Chapter 21
Try a bit more steaming water.
Lydia decided, and Tavis obliged. They both peered into the pan. Lydia sighed.
Well, drat and blast it all!
M'lady, such language for a woman of your position, I'll say,
Travis rebuked.
It certainly doesn't act like tea, does it, Tavis?
Nay, not a bit, I'll say, but still no reason for you to be unladylike about it.
Lydia snorted.
Only you, dear Tavis, dare criticize my manners.
"'Tis because you're usually the spit of perfection, so it fashes me more than a wee bit when you sally.'
"'Well, stir it, Tavis. Don't just let it sit there.'
Tavis flashed her a disgruntled look as he began to stir the mixture rapidly.
"'These talented hands were made for curing the richest hides in all of Scotia, not stirring a lady's drink, I'll say,'
he grumbled. Lydia smiled at his words, how he went on about his talented hands— One would think they were made of purest gold instead of flesh, bone, and a few calluses. She glanced at him, a pensive moment, while he stirred the brew. Ever faithful Tavis by her side. Her mornings and afternoons wouldn't be quite so rich without the man. Her evenings, well, she'd spent her evenings alone for so many years that she scarcely noticed it anymore. Or so she liked to believe.
Why don't you marry?
She had asked Tavis 20 long years ago, when he'd still been a young man, but he had only smiled up at her as he'd knelt by the vats where he'd been soaking a deerskin to buttery softness.
"'I have all I need here, Lydia.'
He spread his arms wide, as if he could sweep all of Dalkeith into his embrace.
"'Why would you be shooing me on?'
"'But don't you want children, Tavis MacTarvet?'
she probed.
"'Sons to take over your tannery, daughters to cherish.'
He shrugged.
"'The Hawk is like a son to me.
I couldn't ask for a finer braw, lad, I'll see. And now we've got the two wee ones running about, and, well, you're without a husband again, Lady Lydia.
He trailed off slowly, his strong hands rubbing and squeezing the hide in the salt mixture.
And just what does my being without a husband have to do with you?
Tavis cocked his head and gave her the patient, tender smile that sometimes swam up to linger in her mind just before she drifted off to sleep at night.
Just that I'll always be here for you, Lydia. You can always count on Tavis of the Tannery, and I'll see that 1,000 times more.
His eyes were level and deep with something she was unable to face. She had already lost 2 husbands to 2 wars, and the sweet saints knew there was always another war coming. But Tavis MacTarvet, he always came back. Scarred and bloody, he always came back. Back to stand in the kitchens with her while she dried her herbs and spices. Back to lend a helping hand now and again as she dug in her rich black soil and pruned her roses. There were times when they both knelt in the dirt, their heads close together, that she'd feel a fluttery sensation in her belly, and times when she sat by the hearth in the kitchen and asked his help brushing out her long, dark hair. He'd take the pins out first, then unsmooth her plates one by one.
"Nothing's happening, Lydia!"
Tavis's voice shattered her pensive reverie and forced her mind back to the present. She shook herself sharply, dragging her thoughts back to the task at hand. Coffee. She wanted coffee for her daughter-in-law.
Maybe it's like the black beans at dried peas and has to soak overnight,
she worried as she rubbed the back of her neck. Nothing was going right this morning. Lydia had woken early, thinking about the lovely lass who had so bedazzled her son, thinking about how the situation must seem from her point of view. Calamity after calamity had struck since her arrival, which is why she'd gone to the buttery to retrieve quite a store of the shining black beans her daughter-in-law so coveted. The least she could do was find Adrian a cup of coffee this morning, before she told her that the hawk had left for Ooster at dawn, or worse, the news Tavis had discovered a scant hour ago, that Esmeralda had been trying to kill Adrian, but was now dead herself. So it had come to this. Peering into a pan full of glistening black beans that were doing not much of anything in the steaming water.
"Maybe we should smash the beans, Lydia,"
Tavis said, leaning closer, so close that his lips were scant inches from hers when he said,
"What think you?"
Lydia beamed.
"Tavis, I think you might just have it. Get that mortar and pestle, and let's get at it. This morning, I'd really like to be able to start our day off with coffee."
"She's going to need it."
"It's getting out of hand, fool. A mortal lies dead," King Finvera snapped.
"Of her own race's hand, not mine," Adam clarified.
"But if you hadn't been here, it would not have come to be. You are perilously close to destroying everything. If the compact is ever broken, it will be by my queen's choosing, not through your act of idiocy."
"You had a hand in this plan too, my liege," Adam reminded. "Furthermore, I have harmed no mortal. I merely pointed out to the Rome that I was displeased. It was they who took action."
"You split hairs quite neatly, but you're too close to rupturing the peace we've kept for 2 millennia. This was not part of the game. The woman must go back to her time." King Finvera waved a dismissive hand.
Adrian was walking in the garden, thinking about the advantages of the 16th century and the serene bliss of unspoiled nature, when it happened. She suffered a horrid falling sensation, as if a great vortex had opened and a relentless whirlpool tugged her down. When she realized that she recognized the feeling, Adrian opened her mouth to scream, but no sound came out. She'd felt this way just before she'd found herself on the Comyn's lap, as if her body were being stretched thin and yanked at an impossible speed through a yawning blackness. Agonizing pressure built in her head. She clutched it with both hands and prayed fervently.
"Oh, dear God, not again, please, not again!"
The stretching sensation intensified. The throb in her temples swelled to a crescendo of pain, and just when she was convinced she would be ripped in two, it stopped. For a moment she couldn't focus her eyes. Dim shapes of furniture wavered and rippled in shades of gray. Then the world swam into focus, and she gasped. Adrian stared in shock at the fluttering curtains of her own bedroom. She shook her head to clear it, and groaned at the waves of pain such a small movement caused.
"Bedroom?"
she mumbled dumbly. Adrian looked around in complete confusion. There was Moonshadow, perched delicately upon the overstuffed bed in her customary way, little paws folded demurely over the wood footrail, staring back at her with an equally shocked expression on her feline face. Her lime-golden eyes were rounded in surprise.
"Princess!"
Adrian reached. Adam quickly made a retrieving gesture with his hand and glared at his king.
"She stays."
King Finvera snapped his fingers just as quickly.
"And I said she goes!"
Adrian blinked and shook her head hard. Was she back in Dalkeith's gardens? No, she was in her bedroom again. This time, determined to get her hands on Mooney, Adrian lunged for her, startling the already confused cat. Mooney's back arched like a horseshoe, her tiny whiskers bristled with indignation, and she leapt off the bed and fled the room on tiny winged paws. Adrian followed hard on her heels. If by some quirk of fate she was to be given a second chance, she wanted one thing, to bring Moonshadow back to the 16th century with her. Adam snapped his fingers as well.
"Do not think to change your mind mid-course. You agreed to this, my king. It wasn't just my idea."
Adrian groaned. She was in the gardens again. It happened 3 more times in quick succession, and each time she tried desperately to capture Mooney. A part of her mind protested that this simply couldn't be happening, but another part acknowledged that if it was, she was damn well going to get her precious cat. On the last toss, she almost had the bewildered little kitten cornered in the kitchen, when Marie, her erstwhile housekeeper, selected that precise moment to enter the room.
"Is that you, Mr. Simone?"
Marie gasped, clutching the door jamb. Startled, Adrian turned toward her voice. The women gaped at each other. A 1,000 questions and concerns tumbled through Adrian's mind. How much time had passed? Was her housekeeper Marie living in the house now? Had she taken Mooney for her shots? But she didn't ask, because she didn't know how much longer she had. Sensing a reprieve, Moonshadow bolted for the door. Adrian lunged after her and abruptly found herself once again in the garden, shaking from head to toe. Adrian moaned aloud. She'd almost had her.
"Just one more time," she whispered. "Send me back one more time."
"I am your king. You will obey me, fool!"
"I found the woman. Therefore, one might say I started this game, my liege. Allow me to finish it."
King Finvera hesitated, and Adam pounced on his indecision.
"My king, she rejects over and over again the man who pleased our queen. She humiliates him."
The king pondered this a moment.
"He claims a woman's soul,"
his queen had said dreamily. He had never seen such a look on Avil's face in all their centuries together, unless he himself had put it there. Fury simmered in the king's veins. He didn't want to withdraw from this game any more than Adam did. He'd watched and savored every moment of the hawk's misery. Finvera studied the fool intently.
"Do you swear to honor the compact?"
"Of course, my liege,"
Adam lied easily. "A mortal pleased my queen," the king brooded.
"She stays,"
he said decisively, and vanished. Chapter 22.
"Welcome, my lord.
Rushka's greeting sounded pleasant enough, but Hawk felt a strange lack of warmth in it. Smudges of black marked the olive skin beneath the old man's tired eyes, and they were pink-rimmed, either from sitting too close to a smoky fire, or from weeping. And Hawk knew Rushka didn't weep. Hawk stood in silence while the man ran a calloused hand through his black hair. It was liberally streaked with gray and white, his craggy face handsome, yet equally marked by time. Absent-mindedly, the man began to plait his long hair, staring into the dying embers as full morning broke across the valley. Brahir Mount towered above this vale, its outlines smoky blue and purple against the pale sky. Hawk dropped to a seat atop one of the large stones near the circle fire, and sat in silence, a trait that had endeared him to this tribe of gypsies. A woman appeared, and deposited two steaming cups before leaving the two men to sit in companionable silence. The old gypsy sipped at his brew thoughtfully, and only when it was gone did he meet the hawk's gaze again.
"You don't like our coffee?"
he asked, noticing the hawk had left his drink untouched. Hawk blinked.
"Coffee?"
He peered into his cup. The liquid was rich, black, and steaming. It smelled bitter, but inviting. He took a sip.
"It's good," he declared thoughtfully.
With a hint of cinnamon, topped with clotted cream, the drink would be delicious. No wonder she liked it.
"Alas, is it?"
The old man smiled faintly.
"You always did see right through me, Rushka, my friend. I hear you've taken a wife."
The hawk looked piercingly at his old friend.
"Why didn't you come, Rushka? When she was ill, I sent for you." "We were told 'twas Colibron. We have no cure for such a poison," the old man said.
Rushka shifted his attention away from the hawk's steady gaze.
"I would have thought you'd have come, if only to tell me that, Rushka."
The old man waved a hand dismissively.
"Would have been a wasted trip. Besides, I was sure you had more pressing things to contend with. All aside, she was healed, and all's well that ends well, eh?"
The hawk blinked. He'd never seen his friend behave so oddly. Usually Rushka was courteous and cheerful, but today there was a heaviness in the air so tangible that even breathing seemed to labor. And Rushka wasn't talking. That in itself was an oddity. Hawk sipped the coffee, his eyes lingering on a procession of people at the far end of the vale. If he wanted answers, he'd simply have to ask around his questions.
"Why did you move out here, Rushka? You've camped in my north field by the Rowans for years."
Rushka's gaze followed the hawk's, and a bitterness shadowed his brown eyes.
"Did you come for Zeldi?"
Rushka asked abruptly.
"I can't handfast Zeldi,"
Hawk had told this man a decade ago, when he'd been bound in service to his king. The Rom had desired a match and offered their most beautiful young woman. He'd explained that it simply wasn't possible for him to take a wife, and while Rushka had understood, Esmeralda hadn't. Zeldi, as they called her, had been so infuriated by his refusal that she'd quickly lain with man after man, shocking even her own liberal people. The gypsies did not prize virginity. Life was too short for abstinence of any sort, which was one of the reasons the people had seemed so intriguing to him as a young lad. He'd been 10 when he'd secretly watched a dusky gypsy girl with budding breasts and rosy nipples make love with a man. 2 summers later, she had come to him saying it was his turn. Ah, the things he'd learned from these people.
"Esmeralda and I have parted ways."
The old man nodded.
"She's said this much."
Rushka spat into the dust at his feet.
"Then she took up with him."
"Who?" Hawk asked, knowing what the answer would be.
"We do not speak the name. He is employed on your land with the working of metals." "Who is he?" Hawk pressed. "You know the man I mean." "Yes, but who is he really?"
Rushka rubbed his forehead with a weary hand. "Yes," Hawk realized with amazement. Rushka had definitely been weeping.
"There are situations in which even the Rome will not do commerce, no matter how much gold is promised for services. Esmeralda was not always so wise." "My people apologize, my lord," Rushka said softly.
Had the entire world gone mad? Hawk wondered as he drained the last of his coffee. Rushka was making no sense at all. Suddenly his old friend rose and whirled about to watch the stream of gypsies trailing down to the valley.
"What's going on, Rushka?"
Hawk asked, eyeing the odd procession. It looked like some kind of Rome ritual, but if it was, it was one Hawk had never seen.
"Esmeralda, he's dead. She goes to the sea."
Hawk surged to his feet.
"The sea? That's the death for a Broodskar, for one who has betrayed her own!" And so she did.
But she was your daughter, Rushka. How? The old man's shoulders rocked forward, and Hawk could see his pain in every line of his body.
She tried 3 times to kill your lady, he said finally.
Hawk was stunned.
Esmeralda? 3 times. By dart and by crossbow. The bandage you wear on your hand is our doing. If you ban us from your lands, we will never again darken your fields. We have betrayed your hospitality and made a mockery of your goodwill.
Esmeralda. It fit. Yet he could not hold the level-headed, compassionate, and wise Rushka responsible for her actions. Nay, not him nor any of the Rome.
I would never seek to bar you from my lands. You may always come freely to Dalkeith upon the sea. Her shame is not yours, Rushka.
Ah, but it is. She thought with your nude bride gone, you would be free to wed her. She was a strange one, though she was my daughter. There were times when even I wondered at the dark thing in her heart. But he brought her to us last night, and by the moon she confessed. We had no choice but to act with the honor we owed to all parties involved.
And now the procession to the sea, with every man, woman, and child carrying white rowan crosses, carved and bound and brilliantly emblazoned with blue runes.
"What manner of crosses are those, Rushka?"
Hawk asked. In all his time with these people, he'd never seen the like before. Rushka stiffened.
"One of our rituals in this kind of death. Rushka, I care for you like my own hawk."
Rushka said sharply. Hawk was stunned into silence. Rushka rarely spoke of his feelings.
For years, you have opened your home to my people. You have given with generosity, treated us with dignity, and withheld censure, even though our ways are different from yours. You have celebrated with us and allowed us to be who we are.
Rushka paused and smiled faintly.
You are a rare man, Hawk. For these reasons, I must say this much, and the risk to my race be damned. Beware. The veil is thin, and the time and place are too near here. Beware, for it would seem you are at the very core of it somehow. Take great care with those you love, and no matter what you do, do not leave them alone for long. There is safety in numbers when this is upon us.
When what is upon us, Rushka? Be specific. How can I fight something I don't understand?
I can say no more, my friend. Just this. Until the Feast of the Blessed Dead, keep close and closer those you love, and far and farther those for whom you can't account.
Nay. Rushka raised a hand to stop the hawk, even as he opened his mouth to demand more complete answers.
If you care for my people, you will not visit us again until we celebrate the sacred Samhain.
Oh, Rushka added as an afterthought.
The old woman said to tell you the Black Queen is not what she seems. Does this mean something to you?
The only Black Queen that came to mind was now scattered ashes in the forge. Hawk shook his head. The old woman was their seer, and with her far-reaching vision she had inspired awe in Hawk as a young lad.
Nay, did she say more? Only that you'll be needing this.
Rushka offered a packet bound with leather cord.
The chamomile poultice you came for.
He turned back to the procession.
I must go. I am to head the walk to the sea. Beware, and guard thee well, friend. I hope to see you and all your loved ones at the Samhain.
Hawk watched in silence as Rushka joined the funeral walk for his daughter. When one of the Rome betrayed the rules by which they lived, he or she was disciplined by their own. It was a tight-knit community. Wild they could be, and liberal-minded about many things, but there were rules by which they lived, and those rules were never to be mocked. Esmeralda had disregarded one of great importance. Those who gave shelter to the Rome were not to be harmed in any manner. By trying to kill the Hawk's wife, she had attempted to harm the Laird of Dalkeith himself. But there was something else. The Hawk could sense it. Something Rushka wasn't telling him, something else Esmeralda had done that had brought strife upon her people. As Hawk watched the procession wind toward the sea, he whispered a Rome benediction for the daughter of his friend. Easing himself back down by the fire, Hawk unwrapped the bandage and cleansed his wounded hand with scotch and water. Carefully, he untied the leather pouch and wondered curiously at the assortment of stoppered flasks that fell out. He picked up the poultice and laid it to the side, sorting through the rest. Just what had the seer seen, he wondered grimly, for she'd given him two other potions, one of which he'd sworn to never use again. Hawk snorted. One was an aphrodisiac he'd tried in his younger days. That one didn't worry him too much. The one he despised was the potion that had been created to keep a man in a prolonged, but detached, state of sexual arousal. He turned the flask with the vile green liquid in it this way and that, watching the sun reflect off the faceted prisms of the stoppered bottle. Shadows rose up and taunted him openly for a time, until his obdurate will banished them back to hell. Quickly he spread the poultice, which eased the pain and would speed recovery. In a fortnight his hand would be well knit. Adam. Although he hadn't outright said it, Rushka had insinuated that it was Adam who had brought Esmeralda to them last night, which meant Adam knew Esmeralda had been trying to kill Adrienne. What else did Adam know? And just what had made his friend Rushka, who had never once shown terror in all the 30-odd years Hawk had known him, betray visible fear now? Too many questions, and not enough answers. Everyone pointed an accusing finger toward the smithy, who even now was probably trying to seduce Hawk's wife.
My wife, who doesn't want me. My wife, who wants Adam. My wife, who didn't care enough to even ask about me when I was wounded.
Esmeralda was dead, but Rushka had made it clear that the real threat was still there, and close enough to Dalkeith to drive the Rome away. Apparently Adam was involved, and he'd left his wife in the thick of it.
Keep close and closer.
The Hawk's mind whirred, sorting the scarce facts and hunting for the most feasible solution to his myriad problems. Suddenly, the answer seemed impossibly clear. He snorted, unable to believe he hadn't thought of it before. But the lass had a way of getting so far under his skin that his mind didn't work in its usual logical fashion with her in the vicinity. No longer. It was time to take control, rather than allowing circumstances to continue to run amok. His pact with Adam entailed that he could not forbid Adrienne to see the smithy, but he could make it damn difficult for her to do so. He would take her to Ooster with him, far away from the mysterious, compelling Adam Black. So what if she hadn't asked about him? She'd made it clear from day one that she didn't want to be wed to him. She had vowed to hate him forever, yet he would swear her body responded to his. He'd have her all to himself in Ooster, and be able to test that theory. Just when had he become passive?
When you felt guilty for burning her queen, his conscience reminded, trapping her here, in spite of her wishes, if she is indeed from the future.
But guilt was for losers and fools, not for Shehak Douglas. There was no guilt involved when she was at stake.
I love her, he told the wind. And so I've become the greatest kind of fool.
A nice one. Time to remedy that. Guilt and passivity dropped away from him in that clarifying instant. The Hawk,